Okay, hello everyone. My name is Chen Zhen. I'm from the Department of Language and Communication Studies, and I'm a PhD student in intercultural communication. So I usually do this session for incoming international students, so kind of help them to adapt to Finnish culture, to understand culture shock, the stress they may encounter, and so forth. And it's actually my first time to do this to outgoing Finnish students. So let's say, why do we do this? Why study abroad? There are a few things I'm... Sorry, this is not on. Sorry. I think... Yes. Why study abroad? There are a few reasons. I'm sure you have thought this through to before you make this decision. First, to see the world. And also to grow academically, because you'll be an exchange student, and personal development, and culturally too. And also you will prepare you for your future career. So to be honest with you, just to have the exchange experience put on your CV, you know, looks great already. You don't really have to do much. To gain new perspectives and develop your intercultural competence. And this is where the key thing that also in our area, what we're researching on, is to how to take another perspective. It's because by default, we understand things from our own perspective. And what does it mean to take a new perspective? How do you understand things from another perspective? So we will talk quite a bit about that in today's lecture. And so basically, we'll talk about the cultural differences and how we should approach these cultural differences. Also, you can reflect back on your own behavior, so hopefully at the end of your exchange, you understand your own culture better. So you understand why you do things the way you do. And learn about culture shock, what it is, what it means, what are the stages there, and how you can survive cultural shock, and how to actually utilize culture shock to make it beneficial for you. And also to learn how do you manage stress and make the most out of your stay. So that's the main purpose. To start with, I'd like to talk about what is culture. What are we talking about when we're talking about culture? Of course, in many ways, it has so many different definitions. We're not talking about culture in a very high culture way, like opera or theater. So it basically is everything. And first thing, we look different. We speak different languages. We eat different food. Religions, of course, education, festivals, celebration, manners, and so forth. It is a very vague term. We use it everywhere, and it applies everywhere. It has, in our field, it has at least more than 2,000 definitions. It's just crazy. But just to simplify things, it's a way of life adopted among community or society. So it's kind of common behavior. So we sort of expect, people from certain culture, we sort of expect them to behave in a certain way. So we can kind of predict how they behave. So it's a shared behavior. And it's important because people do things basically the same way. And so they avoid confusion, so understand each other and allow cooperation. And it's our natural way of being. That means we don't actually consciously know why we do things the way we do. And this is a part I have a lot of when I'm living in Finland, and I got this saying a lot, like, I'm Chinese, by the way. And so they're saying, how do you learn Chinese? It's just so hard. I'm like, I don't know. Everyone else does it. And it's the same applies to Finnish. And if you go to like a Finnish language class and you see all the foreign students struggling with Finnish, and they're saying, like, "Oh, why is it so hard?" And then yet everything does it. It's just so normal. Why do you do certain things? And yet it seems so easy. But I think that's part of when you actually go live in a different culture and you sort of understand your own culture better. So why you do things, certain things you do. So this is actually a very nice question, just to think about what is not culture when we talk about it. Because I have nothing. If you have anything, you can let me know. Because for me, everything is involved in this, in the culture, big concept. Like the way we think, the language we speak, the way we behave, basically everything. So, but when we talk about culture, we're talking about the culture we can see. So we have a classic metaphor as the iceberg. So what we can see is the tip of iceberg that above the water. So we can see the customs, traditions, food, language, history. So basically these are things invisible to us. But what are the underlying values, beliefs, attitudes, vision of the world, presumptions? So if you can understand the base of the iceberg more, so you understand that culture better. We do many things, but you have to understand why people do those things, how they do those things, what do those things for, and how similar are cultures to each other. So I encourage you to go beyond the explicit part of the iceberg to understand the basic values and beliefs more. And there's when we talk about culture, and one of the most things we use is nation. And we have also a lot of tools to analyze national culture. And one of the most famous is Hofstadter's national culture dimensions. How many of you have ever heard about this term? Okay, not a lot. But anyways, it has different, now it has six different dimensions to measure countries, though they have different index, like power distance, like how masculinity, so how masculine the culture is, or how feminine the culture is. But but it's never accurate if you classify, if you compare nations in that way. Because as an outsider, for instance, the Nordic countries can be very the same. You know, if you look at all the indexes, all the Nordic countries are probably the same. But from my personal experience, they're not. For me, Finland is actually, I don't know, it's kind of the weird kid in the family. It's really, really different. I was just in Denmark for a few weeks ago. I was in the University of Copenhagen, there's a research center there. The director of the center, he's actually Norwegian. He's been living in Denmark for like more than 50 years. Okay, so there's one Finnish visiting professor. They're in their 60s, and they're both from the central part, like the Finnish professor also from central part of Finland, and his family lives in the north. And the same applies to the Norwegian director. But anyways, the story goes is when the Norwegian guy said, he every year he drives with his brother from like the central part to the north. And this is the bonding moment. He says, as soon as we jump in the car, we start talking because we see each other once a year. And then the Finnish guy goes, yeah, we do the same. But why do you have to talk? It's a really long journey, you know. It takes 5-6 hours to drive up, and then also the way back. You know, you see your brother once a year. Of course, it's the only opportunity to talk. He said, no, you don't have to. Yeah, we just drive. We talk for the first 10 minutes, and then that's it. So these are the nuances in the cultures. By using these tools, it's very useful, like if you go exchange to a certain country. It's very nice to get a basic idea of what it's like and how you function, sort of, you get the vague idea. But to understand the nuances, the cultural differences, then we have to look at more things, like gender. So the gender inequality, how that is seen in this certain society, class, we have the rich and the poor, the gap between the rich and the poor, and the age, of course, we have aging societies, and ethnic backgrounds, and look at the region, people from urban cities, people from rural areas, they can be very different too, and religion, of course. So when we talk about nations, they're not homogeneous. We need to understand that the nation, the makeup of people from different groups, and we need to pay attention to these groups. and the subcultures within these groups instead of just seeing nation as one big thing. Because we use the term a lot, like a Finnish culture, German culture, and so forth. But we barely talk about the nuances within these cultures. And there's one big thing that happens quite a lot is the misinterpretation and misunderstanding. And these are almost the things that frustrate the most. And I like this picture a lot, is because it seems it's obviously Japanese and a Western businessman, and there seems they're learning about each other. So the Japanese is actually offering a handshake, and then the Westerner obviously is bowing to him. So it is interesting, we're learning about each other more, and we sort of assume, our mind is programmed in the way that we assume the other party will behave in a certain way, so we need to come up with a strategy, but oftentimes it leads to misinterpretation or misunderstanding. And the core, why it's happening, is because we're from different cultures. And that need to, how we interpret things are also different. And that lead to misunderstandings. Because I just give you a very simple example just to say hi. In many cultures, in Finland, you just say hey, and that's sufficient. You know, everyone understands it. You don't have to say anything more than that. If you say more than that, you are being weird. But in many other cultures, you actually say a little bit more. You ask, how are you? You know, you don't really answer that question. Just say, fine, that's good, okay. In China, like my older generation, my parents' generation, they would still say, have you had your meals? And that's how they greet each other. Have you had food? So it is very, like, young generation, we don't use it anymore, but it's very, very interesting if you look at it. I guess because of thousands of years ago, if you have food, it means a great day. So I don't know. It can be where food is really important part of the culture. That's why you ask about, have you had your meal? And that's our way of saying, how are you? But it can be also very different. I was in Philadelphia last November. I was in the one elevator. I was in the hotel elevator. I was going down. And this one black woman, she came in. I know, you know, in the U.S. you're supposed to say hi. I say, hey, good morning. And she said, good morning. And then she went, hey, has anyone said I love you today? In the elevator, I've never met her. And I was like, you know, this is part of, in Asia, you never say I love you. Like, I never got that from my parents. In Finland, I guess people don't do that too often either. It's because it's a very strong word, you don't use it. But there, for her, it's kind of an everyday thing. So for me, if I hear I love you, it's either something really good or something really bad that is happening in my life. So I don't usually hear it, where I don't hear it on a daily basis. But for her, and she just came in, has anyone said I love you today? I was like, today? Of course not. And then she said, well, I love you. So that was a very big culture shock right there. I know that, of course, the way she says I love you is different, but I have to. Like, at that point, I sort of have to respond in that way. I was like, I love you too, I suppose. because it's just a way of saying hi. Probably for her, it's okay to do so in her community. It's okay. It's acceptable. And for her, that kind of I love you is equivalent in Finnish, hey. So they hey and I love you basically the same thing if you put it in the context, because people just basically said hi. So many cultural misunderstandings, many linguists said they're embedded in the language. It's because if you understand the function of the language or the function of the non-verbal behaviors, then you would understand what they're really saying. Like you could perceive that Japanese are being extra polite because they're bawling all the time. And yes, it probably appears so, but they are not being actually extra polite to you. It's just their daily life. They say hi in that way. So if you understand the function of that, it's just saying hi, and it's just appropriate to do so. So if we do understand these Because our mind is wired that way. So it leads to different perceptions. So this term here is called ethnocentrism. It's a tendency to view other groups or cultures from the perspective of our one's own. So we use our own references to understand, to make sense of the world around us, especially when that doesn't work so well when we go to another culture. So when it doesn't work so well, I actually meant culture shock. It's a natural reaction because we will encounter culture differences. We will be shocked at some point. And when we talk about culture shock, it is the mental, physical, and emotional adjustment to living in a new environment. So it's a good sign in a way because your mind is preparing you for the new environment, is adjusting the way you think. And it happens gradually. We'll talk about different stages of culture shock in a minute. And it differs from person to person. So you may, for some people, you go to a destination that you're more familiar with, where you have already friends or family there, so it'll probably be easier for you. But sometimes you go to a culture that is more conservative, you find it's really hard to get to know people or form social relationship with people. It can get uglier. But basically, a culture shock could be the feelings of psychological stress, confusion, anxiety, even depression, and you feel helpless. And on top of that, you feel homesick because you'll be like, okay, back home, I have this and that, and all my best friends are there, my families are there, I know everything. So you will be tired, and you'll feel this tiredness. So why do we have culture shock is the absence of a familiar and or comforting characteristics of one's own culture. There's a metaphor where the fish living in the water, but we don't realize the existence of the water unless we're being pulled out. It's like, I really need water now. You will notice that more when you live in different culture. And also the presence of seemingly irrational or offensive or even hostile aspects of a target culture. So you live in that culture. And the things there, sometimes you don't understand just at that point, and you will complain like they're so stupid. Why things are set up that way? And I can relate to that my first few years in Finland, because for international students, you have to renew your residence permit every year. So of course, the semester typically starts from September, so you need to get that done in summertime. And summertime so is the busiest time, and as you know, there's a summer holiday. So actually the busiest time, you have the least number of workers. So the working hours are also short. You know, I was like, why the system is set up this way? Why is it so stupid? Because obviously you have the most customers at this point, and you don't have workers. But as I live here, I now work full time. I got to have my summer holidays, and I understand how important summer holidays are for things. And when you live in a country like this, is the only warm time of the year. If anyone tries to take that away from me, I will kill that someone. I have to. So it's set up that way, and you understand that it's very important for people. It's almost impossible to take away from people their summer holidays. So before, it could seem very irrational, offensive, was stupid. Now I sort of understand more and I can accept that. And also, we may lack of ability. It can be social skills, it can be language skills. I know typically if you go to a non-English speaking country and you have to learn a third language, if you're not, your proficiency level is not that high, you could have a lot of problems. So you don't have these social skills, communication skills, or linguistic skills to adapt rapidly enough to these changes. So that's why you have culture shock. Just the different stages of culture shock. The first one is honeymoon period. It's the very first stage that you are about to experience very soon, I guess. You are very excited right now, and you're curious about everything that's about to happen. If you're kind of fascinated about things, you romanticize things. At that stage, you don't notice much of the cultural differences. You always focus more on their similarities. That's why actually to live abroad is very different than the experience of traveling abroad. Because traveling abroad, you typically just stay in the honeymoon period. Because everything is beautiful, everything is fantastic. You don't have to deal with all the crappy things, just the beautiful things. But as you live more longer in the destination culture, and then you may get frustrated. And we call this crisis period. So you may get confused. You may notice more these differences, and then you find those differences can be stupid, and you don't understand. And you could reject the new culture, and it happens too. And you notice more and more its shortcomings. But the good news is we have a third adjustment period. For most people, you start to recover after you get frustrated. And gradually, step by step, try and error, you learn what is appropriate. You negotiate. You sort of, because this is the funny thing about culture norms, because nobody actually talk about them too much. Like, we don't have the list from 1 to 10, like from this culture, it should behave in a certain way. We have sort of those things, but they're never accurate. You know, they're very vague, and it differs from person to person. It's not like law. You know, certain things you don't, you should do, and certain things you don't. So you have to like learn that, negotiate with the people, interact with the people to find out, to crack the code. So as you recover, you will relax more. You'll find it's more comfortable to live there. You have become more sensitive towards cultural differences. You understand these differences more. You can make sense of them. They're not just stupid. They are there for a reason, and you start to see this reason more and more. And stage four, hopefully, is the we call the biculture period. So you become fully functional in your native culture and also in the destination culture. So you know the language, you have your friends there, and you have a social network there, so you can just feel yourself. And again, I think the whole culture adaptation is not asking you to be fake. You know, it's not to say, I love you, right, as the example I gave right away. But that doesn't really change who you are. You just know that, okay, this means this in this culture. So I'm doing this. I'm just being polite. I'm just being decent. So the biculture stage is what we desire. But then again, we have a re-entry shock. So when you come back, after your exchange, typically you have to readjust back to Finnish culture. I know it sounds a little bit stupid, could be, because it's your native culture, but you will find because you will find things are not the same, exactly the same, while you are away. I can relate to this very much because in China we have things that happen really, really fast. My hometown, when I left, there was no metro system whatsoever. Now we have 8 lines of metro system. And as a native, I don't know how to take metro in my hometown. And even now today, I go back, I have to like look the map like a tourist. You know, I feel totally like an outsider. And we have this crazy fever of smartphones and using apps there. So everything's paid by your smartphone. You book the restaurant, you go order a taxi, Uber, and everything's done by a smartphone. And I don't know how to use it. I don't have an online banking, and I feel like it can be really challenging. I have to ask my friend, hey, please get me a cab because I can't do that myself. So you will notice that things are not exactly the same anymore. And also you will notice probably on top of you just formed your social network in the destination, you just have new friends, you have to say goodbye to those, you know, all these things combined together, so you may experience the re-entry culture shock. And basically it looks like this. So first you have the honeymoon stage, so you go a little bit high, and then boom, you fall to the bottom. And then you slowly adjust back and reach the biculture stage, and then you go home. You have the re-entry shock and then readjustment. Of course, the process of the whole re-entry shock is a lot less than the actual adjustment stage. But of course, it's not really guaranteed. Everyone will go through this, the whole process. You may get stuck in the crisis stage, or you may try a little bit, go to the adjustment, but then you say, boom, you fall back. It's like, okay, I've tried. So, but do you believe that the bicultural stage is achievable? And don't just give up. It won't be easy, the process, but yep. Managing stress. This is the Bennett 1993 model of intercultural sensitivity. So we'll talk about intercultural competence. I'm sure it can be your first time to live abroad, but I assume it won't be your last time in your life. So how do you make this experience more useful for you, for your future international stays or travels? And Bennett has this six stages. I don't know how well you can see from here. But anyways, you have three here. They're more on the ethnocentric side, and three there ethno-relative stages. We have denial, defense, minimization, acceptance, adaptation, integration. So typically, in denial and defense stages, people are more like, they have this vague idea of who they are. Who we are, us versus them. Bennett actually has a very good example, is how one knows about chocolate. You know, for a chocolate expert, they know the taste, how much cocoa is used, where it comes from, and so forth. But for someone who doesn't know chocolate so well, they'll be like, yeah, it's chocolate. They're all the same, you know. It could be this description, they're all the same. They are all chocolate. They are, you know, Asians in one big group, you know. They are, you know, brown, they're like sweet, whatever, you know, chocolate. So they're not able to tell the nuances, the differences. And basically, that's pretty much in the denial and defense. And sometimes people pretend they know the difference, but actually they don't. I've had that kind of encounters in Finland many times, actually. There was one time when I was in a bar. There's a guy just out of nowhere, he came to me. He's like, hey, sorry, I have me and my friend, we actually have a bet on you, where you come from. I bet that you're coming from China. And my friend actually bets on you're coming from Taiwan. So what are you? You know, it's a very intriguing question because, to be honest, I cannot tell the difference from a Chinese from a Taiwanese, because you can't just, you have to talk with someone, get to know them, and probably from their accent or a little bit background knowledge, you can tell a little bit. You can never know for sure. Not by the way you walk or something. And this guy kind of, he thinks he's an expert, he can tell the difference, but actually cannot. For me, that's kind of a superpower, and I, as a Chinese, I don't have that kind of power. So you have like funny stories. People who are actually more in the defense stage, they pretend they're expert, but they're really not. And maybe you will have a lot of those encounters too. And there's another thing, the minimization here is when we say we're all the same. You know, we're humans, we're human experience, we're pretty much the same. This is also a little bit problematic, because it has a lot of points. You know, it's very close to ethno-relative stages already. But we are very similar, yes, but we cannot treat everyone the same, because we're not treated really that equally. Like many examples, like can be the gender differences. You know, you have to talk about the differences. Women are getting paid less. Where the minorities in the society are actually, the chance of their, you know, for them to get a job interview is a lot less than the natives. And these are the differences. And you cannot not talk about these things. You cannot just say, hey, we're all the same. What are you talking about? We're all treated equally. But we're really not. So we need to address these differences. So minimization is saying we're all the same. I think at least we should say we're all different and it's okay. And we should be treated equally. So not just to say we're all the same, like there's no cultural difference whatsoever. And there's one saying I like a lot is we are very similar with the small differences as human beings. But these small differences make all the differences in the world. It's kind of said nothing, you know. It's like, okay, yeah, differences between us make us different. But then again, it has a very good point. We need to address these differences because these differences do matter. They differ us from one another, and that's these differences make us unique. So as you move forward, you go more to the acceptance, adaptation, integration. And this is more similar to the bicultural stage, what I've just talked about. So you understand the cultural differences more. You don't judge so fast. You are more patient. You take your time to understand another culture. Of course, it's never a linear upwards growth. So you may have your setbacks. There are times you are so frustrated, you're like, I just want to give up. But you know, but slowly, your lowest moments in the later stage could be even higher than where you start. So do you expect setbacks? It's never going to be that easy. So you have your down days and gray days. You don't feel so energetic, and that's totally okay. So how to be more intercultural competent? And in our field, to again simplify things, three things are the most important thing elements in intercultural competence. And the first one is the attitude and motivation. Because for us, we study communication, the first thing is motivation. Do you want to communicate or not? If you don't want to talk with people, no, we can't talk. So it doesn't matter if you speak the language. Well, you know, you've seen that there are people who cannot speak the language. They can play well together. You put a bunch of kids, you know, together. They don't care the races or the language. They're just like holding hands to just go play. So the motivation attitude actually is the most important thing. Do you want to communicate or not? And then the second is more about knowledge. How much do you know about the destination culture? I know probably you will have your country-specific information soon, where you can, nowadays we have internet, you can just Google about the country to know about all the facts, of course. And then we'll have the social skills we need to develop, like basic things like listening skills, and how to develop a relationship with people, and how to maintain those kind of social relationships. And hopefully we can become more sensitive, become more patient, more flexible, and tolerance for ambiguity, because it's you know, as we in communication, for us the whole process of human communication is more of the reducing the amount of uncertainty. The why do we have misunderstandings? Why we have anxieties? I don't know what to expect. You know, I've talked with someone that's from far away, from, you know, a strange place. I don't speak the language. So there are a lot of uncertainties. And these uncertainties often lead to anxiety. You don't know what to expect. You don't know what will happen. You know, you don't know if the communication is going to go well. So, but you become more tolerant along the way. And you say, okay, we'll just go explore and see, you know, where the communication goes. Hopefully it goes well. If not, we can start again. So your tolerance for ambiguities will be a lot higher. You'll become a lot more flexible in the end. And because, as we have talked about, a culture shock is a natural thing. It's not a weakness. So we all experience it. So give yourself time to adapt. So if you have more, again, differs from person to person. If you think you need more time, give yourself more time. Don't push yourself so hard. Also, don't stay alone with your worries. Try to talk with people more. And I'm sure you will go to a destination university. There are facilities there and people there you can talk about. And I do have one concern for Finnish students, because I guess you guys are a little bit spoiled in this system, because this system is very nice, very approachable. And, you know, you can address people by the first names. You know, there's basically no hierarchy. You can just go to the teachers. You can complain if they don't, like, meet you right away, you know. I teach now, and I got scared all the time. If a student sends me an email, oh yes, let's meet, yes. I'm a bit scared too, and because there's no power distance here. But the chances are, if you go on exchange to your other university, things are different there. It could be even hard to actually talk with the teacher. And chances are you will encounter a lot of unpleasant experiences you may have. But don't stay along with your worries. Try to talk with people. Talk with people back home. Talk with your new friends. And don't stay along with your worries. And use your humor too. Because this is what I do all the time in Finland. I'm just a stupid foreigner. I make mistakes. What do you expect me to do? I'm not a late native. I'm trying to learn. So if you have that kind of attitude, I think things are a lot easier. I won't be perfect. I'm not from here. I'm trying to learn things. So give me more time, will you? And also, the last thing I want to talk about is the university as a bubble. As we understand that university is always a safe place. There's certain, you know, students, teachers, is a safe environment. But do go explore the society a bit more. Go out of your university and make friends from outside. And you'll find those experiences are very rewarding. In the end, I have a reading list. I know, of course, don't worry about them. I know most of you won't even look at them. But just in case you go crazy, I have my email address down there. If you have any questions in the future regarding your culture shock experience where you want to have someone to talk about these differences, I do have quite a few students would email me back about their experiences and so forth. So I'll be happy to listen, help you to share my personal opinions with you. So if you have anything regarding these experiences, you're more than welcome to email me. And I think that's pretty much it. Thank you so much for your attention. Thank you.